Dear Madam. No, there's more. There's okay. more. This is Don't Ask Tig. I'm Tig Notaro, and I find it adorable that you're still asking me for advice. Today, I'm lucky to be joined by comedian, actress, YouTube star, and host of A Little Late with Lily Singh on NBC. Lily, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. This is an accomplishment for me, honestly.
It's an accomplishment?
100%. You're like super friggin' cool. And so if I'm on your podcast, this means something to me.
It really does. Yeah. For somebody to go from hosting their own talk show to sitting in a sound booth to do a podcast, it's a major step up.
100%.
So congrats to you.
The budget for this is higher.
Oh, I highly doubt that. But Lily, you've said that the hardest part of hosting a talk show is figuring out how to sit down with a guest in front of camera and still feel natural and comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So you're well into your second season. Is it still difficult for you or?
No, this season is actually way easier for me. And I think it's why I'm also having a much better time this season. I'm having a lot more fun is because I've really changed how we do interviews. You know, first season we shot live to tape. And for anyone listening, that's like, what the hell are you talking about? Live to tape means, hey, this guest is going to be in the episode for 6 minutes. So we're going to tape with them for 6 minutes and you have 6 minutes worth of questions. I don't like that. I don't like not being able to get deep. I don't like asking the surface questions about like, okay, so you just finished telling me something traumatic and now I'm going to do a hard pivot into your new book that we're going to discuss. Like, I like diving in. And so now in this season, we shoot, you know this, Tig, you were on the show. We shoot for like 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
We edit it and we get the best 10 minutes and put in the episode. But I get to get really deep in conversations and I ignore the cards. And yeah, there's a framework, but I will, if you say something that's interesting, I will dive in on that. And I just have really real conversations now. So it's much more enjoyable.
That's the best. You and I, we went off the cards a bit when I started telling you about getting bamboozled.
I also cried. I want everyone to know that I cried. Tig made me cry. And actually, Tig, you don't know this. She told such a funny story that for the rest of the day, I had to keep redoing takes during my sketches because I actually lost my voice. And like it affected my throat because you made me cry and laugh so hard. Yes.
Oh, good. Well, I hope that ends up in the episode. It
for
was a
sure.
really fun exchange with you. But I totally get that. There's certainly, I mean, obviously, this is just a podcast, but maneuvering the same situation of silliness and then also wanting mm-hmm. to ask certain questions. But then my real love is going off the rails.
Oh,
I really,
sure.
really love going off
it's
the rails. It's
also just less exhausting. I think I learned in season one, yeah, the schedule is crazy. And I mean, any daily show, anything is a lot of work. But mm-hmm. when you have to then memorize questions, know the talking points, it's exhausting. But when you can actually just turn off a little bit and be like, hey, I'm a human. They're a human. I want to hear their dope stories. That element of exhaustion gets eliminated because you're just being a real person having a real conversation.
On a talk show of all things. How crazy.
Yes, yeah. Talking on a talk show sounds like it should be a good idea.
Yeah, that's funny. Now, I'm aware that you have a friend in Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Is this correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And he's a childhood idol of yours who's turned
yes.
into a mentor. What made you look at The Rock as an idol?
First of all, you should know I love this conversation because this is how to get me to perk up for sure.
Okay.
As a kid, I was obsessed with, at the time, WWF, now WWE. And in my school and in my neighborhood, that's what everyone talked about. That was the cultural norm. And I don't know what it was about The Rock. I think it was his charisma,
uh-huh.
just how entertaining he was, that I fell in love with as a kid. So as a kid, I'm like, he's so hot. I have a crush on him. His posters were all over my wall. And then as I got into this industry and I grew up a little bit, my crush was still there, but I started to appreciate the other parts of him, which is his work ethic is just incredible. and getting to follow his career as it's evolved from football to pro wrestling to TV to movies. As someone who was trying to get into the industry myself, I was like, wow, he works so hard. Mm-hmm. And then when I got the chance to meet him, this is going to sound a little silly, Tig, but this is what it was. What took me back so much about him was that he is so incredibly nice. And like, yeah. I don't think I fully believed that you could be that rich and that famous and that important and still be such a nice person. I think I didn't fully believe that was possible. And when I met him and how down to earth he was and how willing he was to help me and give me advice and guide me, I thought, wow, he is a role model, not just because of his talent, but just because of his ideas about life and how to carry yourself. And so he's yeah. super dope. And anytime he gives me advice, I count my blessings twice because I know he's so busy.
And how did you end up connecting with him?
Well, when I was making YouTube videos, very often I would mention him in my jokes. Like, I got a crush on The Rock, or he'd be my punchline mm-hmm. of a joke. Yeah. And I didn't realize that his daughter was a fan of my videos. Ah. So behind the scenes, his daughter's like, Dad, this girl Lily really talks about you. So this was the evolution. One day he randomly tweeted me, responding yeah. to one of my tweets. And I thought, okay, spontaneous reply back. I cried. Low-key, I cried. And then it turned into a more frequent exchange. And he followed me and DM'd me, said, someone from my team will reach out. And then I kid you not, Tig, one day I woke up and there was an email in my inbox that said, hey, it's DJ. And I was like, it's who? And it was him saying, here's my number. I want to connect. And we met at the MTV Movie Awards completely because he orchestrated it. He got me the credentials. He got me escorted backstage to the green room. And he facilitated the entire meeting because he knew it would mean the world to me.
Wow, that's so nice.
Yes.
That's great. And then you guys just stayed in contact and he's guided you with good advice?
Yes, I pick my moments to bug him very strategically. I don't message him for just anything, but if I'm really in a dilemma and I need his guidance, I will message him and he always replies. Maybe not the same day, but he always replies and gives me his advice, which I think
is outstanding. Could I get his email address?
therock@therock.com.
You'd be like, who is this? So you started your YouTube channel, it's my understanding, because you wanted to feel more connected with people. You felt lonely. And just a few years later, you had millions of viewers and followers and fans. And was that the connection that you were looking for?
God, no. You're right. I started making YouTube videos in 2010 because the really simple way of putting it is I was a sad person. I was doing something in school. I was getting a degree in psychology that I was not interested in. I did not feel passionate towards it. I was scared about my life because everyone in my life was telling me I had to have a very linear life of going to school, getting married, having kids, doing that Indian thing. And I was just super stressed. I wasn't feeling passionate about anything in life. And so as a kid, I was always very creative. And I think I convinced myself as I grew older that I had to let go of that. I could not be creative. I had to do this linear life. And when I discovered YouTube, I thought, wow, what is this thing where people are literally making videos in their bedrooms creatively and telling jokes? And I was so intrigued. I posted my first video and it was bad. It was a bad video. It wasn't funny. It wasn't entertaining. It wasn't comfortable at all. But it kind of re-sparked something in me that was like, wait, maybe you could be an adult but still play and be creative like you've always been, you know? And so it got me out of this funk and it led me to a community of people that were in similar funks, people that weren't passionate about what they were doing in school, people that were also a little depressed, who had family pressures. And I thought, wow, I'm not the only one. It may really open my eyes to this phenomenon happening across different cultures of people feeling like this. And so I spontaneously uploaded a second, third video, and it led to me having this incredible fan base, but it was never driven by, oh, I want millions of fans and I want this to be my career.
Right.
It was always just like me chasing happiness, to be honest, and this was the result.
And then parlaying it into a talk show. I mean, was that even a part of something that you wanted for yourself, or just...
I'm going to be real honest with you here, Tig. This is, I think you should have known by this point. I'm honest to a fault almost about things. I think people expect me to say right now that it's always been my dream to have a talk show and I grew up on late night, but that's simply not true.
Yes.
My dream since I was really young was to be creative. I wanted to be a rapper. I wanted to be music. I wanted to be in TV. I knew that.
wanted to entertain and connect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the truth is, my family never grew up watching late night. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because they never related to what they saw on late night. You know, my parents could never watch a late night show and be like, I get that point of view or I relate to that. Mm-hmm. My mom has openly told me, like, my mom is very honest. She said, season one, I didn't understand a goddamn thing you did on that show. And I think that's why I made the changes I made to season two. But I wanted to do the show because I wanted to be like, hey, like, I have an opportunity to be creative here and do all of those things I wanted to do as a kid. It's not because of the legacy of late night. It's not because I grew up on it. It's because I wanted to infuse myself into something. And my proudest moment was my mom recently messaging me saying, I love season two and I understand all of the jokes. And I'm like, yes, I made a show for my parents, baby.
That's awesome. It probably has a lot to do with you settling into yourself and who you are. And obviously, there's an appreciation out there for it. So that's good. That's great. We made it now to the point of the show where I need your help, quite possibly trickles of The Rock's help.
Ooh,
we'll take whatever we can get. So
you're going to get super honest advice here.
That is wonderful. So are you ready to do this?
I am as ready as I'm going to be.
Okay, that sounds pretty ready. Our first question comes from Alice, and it's what we like to call a hoo boy. Hoo boy. Hoo boy. Hoo boy. Hoo boy. Okay.
Hoo boy.
Hoo boy. Alice writes, my mother lives in the Midwest and has decided that she wants to retire near me in Southern California. She's single and doesn't know anyone else here. She also has zero retirement savings. On multiple occasions, she's joked, in quotes, about moving in with my husband and me. Is it wrong that I'm freaked out by this? Should I just be happy that I will finally live near my mother again after more than 20 years apart? Lily, what does Alice do? What would you do? Where do your parents live?
Okay, you see what? This is going to be an interesting answer, Tig. I'll tell you why.
Because
I'm coming at this with a cultural lens.
Okay.
When I'm listening to Alice talk about this, and I'm like, I didn't know this was an option, Alice. I'm going to be honest with you. My parents live in Toronto. I live in L.A.
Okay.
As a kid, the only way I was ever told that I would be able to move out of the house was if I got married. So the biggest accomplishment for me in my life personally was being able to move out of my house for reasons that weren't marriage. It was my career. But otherwise, that I've been told was a big no-no. See, in
how
Indian
old
culture,
were you when you moved out?
25.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm stunted in a lot of ways. But I gotta say, in Indian culture, it's very normal for parents to move in with their kids at some point. Your question of, is it okay and normal that I'm freaked out? Absolutely. Just because Indians do it doesn't mean they like it.
Right.
There's a lot of stress involved with it. I would say what I've learned and where I'm coming at right now in life is I believe that we should be there for our parents because they were there for us very often and
absolutely,
when we needed it most. But I also believe in setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I know boundaries is a word, especially my parents, if they were to listen to this podcast, would be like, stop making up words that
and
don't
they
exist.
Are. They are listening. I
exactly.
know your parents are listening to this podcast. Go ahead. They're huge fans of this.
Absolutely.
But go ahead.
I would say my honest opinion is I think you would really regret if you didn't open your arms and door mm-hmm. to your mom. But I do mm-hmm. think you should set healthy boundaries. It is your house. It is your life. You are an adult. It is your family. You are allowed to set boundaries of what you think is acceptable or not. But I think you would regret it if you completely shut her up.
Yeah, you're probably right. It sounds like that's already creeping into Alice's head. I mean,
mm-hmm.
she wrote to me, you, and The Rock to find out what to do. And it's funny because, I mean, it's not funny, but my parents have passed away. But my stepfather is my surviving parent. And I'm always thinking, if he needs to go somewhere and live somewhere, he needs help, what are we going to do? How are we going to facilitate this? Mm-hmm. And I don't think he would ever come here, but I do think you're right, especially, you know, obviously not everyone has a great relationship with their parents, but
right.
Alice must have a really great relationship with her parents or her mother in that her mother's considering moving out there. But right. I think a happy medium might be to say, that's great if she wants to relocate to Southern California, but I would draw the line if you're concerned, which I think it can be hard on a relationship when family lives with you. So maybe the happy medium is that your mother does move out to Southern California and lives nearby. Maybe make it clear that moving in is not really right. I mean, I know Southern California is not a cheap place, and and she doesn't have retirement savings. Maybe a part-time job would be helpful for some income and to find some friends and give her something to do.
In our, my culture, if my parents come to LA and visit me every once in a while, if I was to ever even suggest that they would stay at a hotel, I would be disowned for life. For life.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That, well, that would be like a huge blow to them. They'd be like, excuse me, you're not going to make room in your home for all of us? It doesn't matter how many people. It could be my mom, my dad, my sister, three kids, or house. It doesn't matter how many. I will have to make room for them in my home. And if not, I will be a bad daughter.
See, I would be happy to do that. My stepfather will not stay with us.
Really?
No matter, he insists on a hotel. Every time. When he goes to see my brother, he insists on a hotel every time. And I'm always like, you could stay in this room. You could do it. Nope. He wants a hotel.
My parents would not be staying in a hotel. My dad would be complaining about the pillow, the room service, the food, the everything.
Oh, man. Well, Alice, the mother-daughter bond can at times be complicated.
For sure.
But you do only get one mom, unless you get two, like my sons. So, and then I know of other gay couples where they've separated and then there's four moms. Look, so
the more moms, the merrier.
Absolutely. The more moms, the merrier. Good luck with everything, Alice.
Good luck,
Have
Alice.
Your mom move out, get a job, and let us know how that goes. We'll be back with more questions after the break.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.
I just feel like we are surrounded in this world by bullshit.
So how can you know what's real and what's not? Science versus, that's how. We answer questions like, does anti-aging skincare actually work? And what is your true personality type? And to answer these questions, we don't use opinions. We dive into the scientific studies, talk to the experts, and put it in a podcast that I know you are gonna love. Listen to Science versus on Spotify.
And we are back. Lily, our next question comes from Ryan. Ryan writes, I often don't respond to texts immediately, and it upsets people sometimes. What do you feel is the appropriate response time? What are other text etiquette rules you follow or recommend? I'm terrible at responding on email. How are you with texts?
Okay. I'm gonna
That's be honest. A different world.
It's a different world. It depends who it's from. If you are in my close circle of people I interact with often, you will get a quick response. But I leave some people on read for a week or more. I'm bad with some people. I'm going to say I don't believe there should be an overarching etiquette when it comes to text. That's stressful. That's a lot of instant access to someone. And I think people need to chill out a little bit with
for
their expectations.
Sure. Yeah.
There's way too – emails, at least it's like emails generally mean work – projects. I can accept that there might be some timeliness to emails. Tig, I'm sorry. But with texts, I feel like texts can be casual. They can be just checking in. They could be about anything. And I feel like people need to just chill out with the, it's been 2 hours, you haven't responded to me.
Yeah, I agree. And to be fair, I said that with emails, if it's work related, I try to get back as quickly as possible. But when people are writing long personal emails. Mm-hmm. I would really rather just get on the phone and talk to somebody. So I'm terrible with responding to
emails.
I'm
also going to say the thing mm-hmm. about texts is that there's never a conclusion, which makes it hard. Emails is like, great, thank you so much. The loop has been closed. We're done. It's finished. You put it in a drawer. It's neat and tidy. Texts are, hey, how are you? Good. How are you? Is the conversation
See, you've
done?
Never gotten is a text from my stepfather.
Why does it say the end?
his texts are, Dear Tig, please tell Max and Finn that I love them and I'm going to try to come visit them on their birthday. Love, Rick.
See, that's a text wrapped up neatly in a bow, and I appreciate that. But that is not the norm. Most people are like, we should hang out soon. When? Wait, when? Hey, we should hang out soon. Sorry, when are we? It's chaos. It's confusion.
I try to remind myself that just because somebody is texting me and needing something immediately from me, it doesn't mean that there is space in my life, my schedule, or my headspace for it. And so I also try to remind myself that if an in-person conversation about it doesn't clear things up and make things right, then I'm not too worried. But if they allow for me to say, listen, I was really stressed or busy and just kind of couldn't open that door to this communication, or I couldn't be there for you at that point, you know, because I think it's hard for people to understand. I know this is very obvious, but it's hard to understand people's lives and people's schedules and their emotional availability. And it's a lot.
What I love about you, Tig, is you say everything very eloquently, and then I come in and I just kind of ratchet it up a little bit. The correct response would be, new phone, who dis, when someone texts you.
Yes.
It's also just, no, I completely agree with what you're saying, Tig. It's not healthy to make yourself constantly available to people. You know, that's not how you should live your life. And I think the way I do it, because I'm not great at texting as well, is I'm really honest about it. I will tell people straight up when they message me, like, hey, I'm letting you know right now, I'm not too great at being on my phone all the time.
Right.
So if it's urgent or something, like, please feel free to call. But otherwise, like, do not take this personally. And so all my friends know if Lily doesn't reply, she's communicated very clearly that this is not her preferred method. So, you know, you can't argue with that.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is a preferred method is key to it, to let people know, hey, this is how I communicate best. It's through phone calls or emails or texts, and I communicate best in this way or that way socially or with emergencies or with work. And, you know, if people don't respect it, it's frustrating, but you've made it clear, and I think that's what's really key is making it clear. And also, if you don't have the relationship with somebody where you feel like you need to make it clear, you don't have to make it clear.
You don't have to explain yourself to everyone.
Agreed. And you know what I also feel is that if you are slow to respond or you forget to respond, it's okay to say, hey, sorry I was slow to respond, or hey, I spaced responding, or I couldn't respond. You don't have to make up some stupid...
Oh, yes. Don't have My phone fell in the ocean, and then I saw a shark.
You don't have to do that.
Just
be honest. To do that.
Sorry, I was really under the weather. I was tired. Yeah. Sorry, I was going through something. Sorry, I was slow. Just own up to
I'm
it.
Hey, I'm catching up on life right now.
Yeah.
How's it going? Do you still need help with your flat tire 2 weeks later?
Right.
Are you still on the side of the highway?
For sure.
Those are the rules that we recommend, Ryan. Shoot us a text and let us know how our advice goes.
We'll respond between 5 to 10 business days.
Exactly. If at all, right? Yeah. We don't know Ryan.
Ryan, who are you?
Ryan, come on.
Ryan,
new phone, who dis?
That's what's up. New phone, who dis?
New phone, who dis? Our next question comes from Jess, who has a YouTube-related question.
Oh,
Jess
yeah.
writes, my kids are very into online videos and vlogs, watching others and making their own. I am very uninterested and unenthusiastic about anything YouTube or social media related, and it's often difficult to keep that from coming out in my words and reactions. However, I don't want to let what I admit might be biased dislike alienate my kids from sharing their interests with me. How can I be more accepting and open-minded about this technology and culture that I honestly hate?
I love the honesty of this question. I have to say, I love the honesty of this question. Jess, I'm going to be honest with you. My entire career was social media. I made YouTube videos. I vlogged. I still vlog. I'm very of this space. Mm-hmm. As I've gotten older and new things have popped up, like TikTok and all the stuff, I have felt myself say the same things. Like, I don't care about this new technology. I am so over this. I don't get it at all. This is the evolution of humans. Everyone thinks that their time and what they liked growing up is superior to whatever is happening now. It's just human nature. I will say that social media and YouTube is not going to go away anytime soon, if ever. I think it is the evolution of entertainment. And I think you don't have to be so enthused and on board, but I would say that you should encourage and kind of take an understanding to how to keep your kids safe and engaged in a healthy way. I think that is important. But I would say, yeah, a lot of stuff on the internet is trash, but I will also encourage you to find the stuff that's actually great. Social media is the reason for a lot of the activism we have in the world. It's the reason for a lot of progression we've had. It's one of the reasons Gen Z is one of the most progressive generations of all time. There's a lot of beautiful things that the internet can offer. So my advice to you would be, don't be scared of it. It's good to understand it so you can make sure you guide your kids through that experience. Because like I said, there's a lot of trash on the internet as well.
I was going to say something very similar. I mean, I'm at that juncture with my kids in that I already am a bit out of touch. And now I have two young boys that I'm realizing it's sneaking up. I need to familiarize myself more with technology and the way things are going just for the sake of them, whether it's enjoying something with them that they like online. Not that my four-year-olds are just sitting at computers online, but they will watch certain shows on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I just want to be knowledgeable and to a certain degree. But I do think it's not like my kids love when I sit down and watch a show with them that they love. Right. And then, like you mentioned, also for their safety, I think it's really important to have knowledge. So I think we're on the same page there, Lily. Jess, thanks for writing. And don't forget to watch my web series, Under a Rock, on YouTube. Lily, our last question comes in the form of a segment we're calling Come Back to Me Later. Come back to me later. Everyone wishes that they had the perfect response at the ready for certain social interactions. Mm-hmm. So Come Back to Me Later is a segment where we make that wish come true. Today's request comes from Victoria. Victoria writes, I have a 15-year-old stepdaughter. She's kind, smart, and extremely beautiful. My problem is that at any family functions, my in-laws and other members of our family constantly talk about her body to her, comments on how tall she is, how long her legs are. I've spoken to them about it and asked them to stop, but it still continues. I'd like to arm her with some respectful comebacks so she can speak up for herself and let them know they are out of line and making her uncomfortable. I don't want her to think that she has to say thank you and smile. Any advice?
Ooh.
Do you need a respectful response other than...
Yeah, you know what? I ask the same question. I don't think you need a respectful response. I think what if I was in your position, which admittedly I am not, but if I was, I would let my daughter know that you will not get in trouble for standing up for yourself, and especially when it comes to your body. I think I remember reading this or hearing this somewhere, or maybe I just completely made it up. I'm not sure. But I remember
The show is called Don't Ask Tig.
Perfect.
We are not claiming to have real advice.
Perfect. I believe Will Smith said, when he was talking about how he raises his kids, Jaden and Willow, he said, I from a young age, didn't tell Willow what she could do with her hair or if she could pierce her nose or not, because I don't want to teach her that someone else can make decisions about her body. Mm. And that's always been instilled in my mind, because yeah. I'm also from a culture where people will make comments about like whether people are chubby or too skinny or tall or short and all that stuff. And there's little pet names for it. I think the biggest thing you can do for a kid is teach them, hey, in certain circumstances and situations, you will not get in trouble.
Yeah.
For standing up for yourself. You don't need a respectful response, in my opinion. I feel like she
yeah,
should stand up
and do it. Yeah, you need a clear response.
Exactly. I think the response is clear and drawing the line. Because mm-hmm. you don't ever want your kid to be in a situation where she's being approached or someone is doing something to her and she thinks, oh, am I allowed to, or should I do a respectful response? No, you just need a clear response.
Yeah, a very clear response. That's a great point, because outside of your house, you need to make sure that your daughter understands that she doesn't need to be fumbling through wondering
exactly.
what's polite.
Don't talk about my body. Don't discuss my body ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Like those
yes.
are clear. Those are
yes.
clear things. And I don't
yeah.
think those are like if I was 15 and I said that to one of my uncles, I feel like they'd be like, what just happened? And that's what I would want.
Right, right. Yeah, I was trying to think of if there's any other, I guess that's just a clear one is, yeah, don't talk about my body, or I'm not comfortable with discussing how my body looks or appears.
Right, right.
I'm not comfortable with this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'd prefer to not have this discussion ever.
Another thing to say is that, like, when you say things like, and I agree, letting mm-hmm. people know that I'm uncomfortable, but it also, I would ask the question of, do aunts and uncles care about that? You know,
mm-hmm.
they should, but I feel
yeah.
like they should generally know that it's a, so I feel like even just saying like, you don't have an option. Do not talk about my body.
Yes.
There's no questions about that.
Yes.
It's just do not do this. Or again, new phone, who dis?
That's always the answer.
100%.
I wish this wasn't happening, Victoria,
for sure.
But I hope that that helped. And I hope that your daughter can implement these direct, clear mm-hmm. responses, whether it's with your family or outside of the house.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, if they ever make comments about you, Victoria, or in front of you, I feel like you setting that example of being like, don't talk about that, even
mm-hmm.
in front of them. Because I know she's mentioned she's had conversations with them, but I think it could be a good display to show your daughter,
mm-hmm.
like, look how I handled this, and you're allowed to handle it like this.
Lily, you've got the goods.
Do I got the goods for real?
You got the goods. You got the goods.
Thanks.
You got the pro sound room.
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way, she's available for voiceover work. Lily, that's all the listener questions. We made it through, but we're not finished yet. We have
let's
one
do
more
it.
Person to help. And this is advice of yesteryear.
When Jerry brags about taking Ginny out, he learns that she dates all the boys.
So, as we see now, menstruation is just one routine step in a normal and natural cycle.
How do you choose a date?
Well, one thing you can consider is look.
I did everything you said, but my boss still hasn't asked me to lunch.
This is where we take a real question mm-hmm. from an advice column of yesteryear, and we try to answer it a little better.
Okay.
This very old question comes to us from 1898,
ooh,
specifically
fun.
Beatrice Fairfax's advice column called Dear Beatrice Fairfax. Dear
it.
Madam. No, there's more. There's
okay.
more. I am a young lady who is very much in love with a young man who is now at present a soldier with the 1st Regiment, Company K, at San Francisco. Before leaving, he promised to write me, pretending he cared for me. He never fulfilled his promise. And since he left, I have found that while he was going with me, he was at the same time going with another girl. I would like to ask your advice on what I should do. Write to him, as I found out his address through a friend, and tell him what I think of him, or let him pass out of my mind forever. Signed, Poughkeepsie Forsaken.
There is so much to unpack here.
Yes, there is, madam. What's your take on Poughkeepsie Forsaken's next move? I mean, well, sure, we're a little late. Talk about being late texting and email. I mean, this is from
letters.
1898.
There's letters going on here.
Yeah, this
I mean, obviously, I'm tempted to tell you that should he write you, you respond saying, new mailing address, who dis? But
is in line.
I think that back then, women were encouraged to be a certain way. They are still even today a little bit. I think you draw the line. You say, hey, listen here, boy. Uh-huh. I have moved on. I don't need you two-timing me. And I don't think you need to write him. I think you need to move on and get someone who's actually present and can please you and serve you and do all the good things.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I mean, I'm always amazed by this time period when people were leaving long distances for long periods of time.
Right.
And we will write come winter. Make sure to chop the wood for father when he comes home. You know, like the kettle is on the stove. We have,
right.
I don't even know. Stephanie and I talk to each other like that around the house.
That's romantic. That's romantic.
When she'll come in from work, I'll say, come in, I have the fire going, the children are... And I can never finish my sentence, but this is really that time period because somebody leaves and you don't shouldn't even know where his address is. They don't have Google. They don't have...
That's exactly. There's so much uncertainty. Are they gone? Where are they gone?
Bye-bye.
When are they coming back? For sure.
He's not even... in the military. This guy might be completely fraudulent and just went back home a couple of streets later.
This is the original catfish. That's what this is.
Yeah, Poughkeepsie Forsaken doesn't even know that he's just a couple of blocks back and he knows he'll never see her again.
Poughkeepsie, you need to dipsy. Okay, that's
Poughkeepsie needs to dipsy. All right, you want to hear the answer?
I'm dying to hear the answer, please.
Okay. My dear girl, to write a letter requires some mental effort. To send it requires a 2-cent stamp. Believe me, your fickle soldier is worth neither expenditure. Let him pass out of your mind without flattering his vanity with reproaches.
That's kind of okay advice, though.
Yeah, for sure. I just love that this guy is not worth 2 cents.
For sure.
Yeah.
I also, from this moment forward, will only describe people as passing out of my mind. That is the only way I will describe people.
This is really the only time one of these older advice of yesteryear letters were reasonable.
Yeah, it's
the answer is never this reasonable. So I hope that Poughkeepsie Forsaken got this answer. I mean, God knows where she would have looked to find this if she didn't open the letter or...
I'd like to believe she went on an entire life journey. I would like to believe that she went on several dates, met several men, maybe explored her sexuality a little bit, maybe discovered what her needs and wants are.
I think she's bi.
100%.
I can tell. Poughkeepsie Forsaken is so bi.
Yep.
And even identifies as queer.
Yeah. Yep, for sure.
Well, Lily, we did it. We gave
we
some solid
the problems.
The rock advice, solid the rock advice. And I also did a little shout out for your voiceover career.
I appreciate that. For those of you that are wondering what's happening, I'm in a full-on sound booth that I have in my house.
Yeah.
So I've taken this podcast very seriously. Only the best for you, Tig.
I appreciate that. Only the best for you too, kid. Do you have anything that you want to promote other than positivity and kindness and
things
like
that? Oh, you're so sweet. I get to promote something. I mean, yeah, if you care at all and if you feel intrigued, you can watch season 2
of my... Everyone cares.
Thank you. You can watch season 2 of my late night show on NBC. It's on at 1:35 a.m. It's pretty late, so you can watch it the next day on Hulu, Peacock, or YouTube, and that's fine too. I get it. I go to sleep quite early as well.
Awesome. Well, enjoy your bump in numbers from my podcast.
Oh, yeah. Tig's also on the show. So if you like Tig, she's on the show. And she's hilarious. I told you, I cried. She's hilarious.
It was really fun. And it was so kind of you to make time to be on
my podcast. I will take any opportunity to give bad advice.
It was great. You were so, so natural at it. And I look forward to seeing my episode on your show. I'm going to stay up late and watch it.
I will watch it the next day.
All righty. Well, thank you, Lily.
Thank you so much for having me.
One more thing. I have a very special request for my listeners. Do you have a secret that you need my advice to deal with? What's the secret you have never verbalized to anyone? Maybe not even to yourself. I want to hear it. Call 833 833- 877-875-8444, 833-ASK-TIG-4, and leave me an anonymous voicemail and I might play it on the show. Don't Ask Tig is hosted by me, Tig Notaro. It's produced by Thomas Ouellette and Shayna Deloria. Our editor is Phyllis Fletcher. Executive producer, Lauren D. Engineering and sound mixing by Johnny Vince Evans. Digital production by Christina Lopez. Talent booking by Marianne Ways. Production support from Pizza Shark. Our theme music is Friend and Tig by Edie Brickell and Kyle Cresham. And Listen to Your Heart by Edie Brickell. Special thanks to Hunter Seidman, Lily Kim, and Alex Schaffert. Concept developed by Tracy Mumford. Our executive consultant is Dean Capello and Gobsmack Studios. You can always ask for advice at don'asktig.org. Just write in with your problem or send us a voice memo. You can also follow us on social media at Don't Ask Tig. Don't Ask Tig is a production of American Public Media. And as always, thanks, Dana. And I'll tell Becky. That's what you're. Hi, I'm stand-up comedian and sex symbol Tig Notaro.
And I'm actor and writer Cheryl Hines.
Before Cheryl and I got into the big business of podcasting together, we were just simply friends.
And we're still friends. But now we talk about a different documentary every week on our podcast, Tig and Cheryl, True Story. So whether you love documentaries or just want to hear us slowly lose our minds, check out Tig and Cheryl, True Story, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, cool.